Hello, do-it-yourselfer. Ever thought about gardening? If you can build that window box, you can build a raised bed in your backyard. Bonnie veggie and herb plants in raised beds make a fast weekend project with a big payback. Fresh, grow-em-yourself tomatoes and peppers, kale, basil and thyme, and so much more. Bonnie plants are healthy and strong and help jumpstart your garden. So get growing. Plans and how-tos at bonnieplants.com.
You're listening to Heritage Radio Network, broadcasting live from Bushwick, Brooklyn. If you like this program, visit heritageradionetwork.org for thousands more.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to Sharp and Hot. This is episode 39, if you are keeping track. I am your host, Chef Emily Peterson, joining you today via heritageradionetwork.org, broadcasting live from Roberta's Pizza in Bushwick, Brooklyn. Thank you so much for tuning in. On today's show, I have two very exciting guests. I have Andre Mack, owner and winemaker of Mouton Noir Wines and sommelier at Thomas Keller's restaurants, The French Laundry and Per Se, and author of the new culinary coloring and activity book called Small Time Cooks. He is joining me in the studio. Hello, Andre.
Hi.
Hi. And via phone, I have another author, Kate Payne, who has written The Hip Girl's Guide to the Kitchen and is joining me via phone. Welcome, Kate.
Thanks for having me. Hello.
I'm so glad that you are both here. I am excited to have two writers on my show on the same day. This is exciting for me as a fellow writer. And so when the opportunity came up and the timing worked, I was like, yes, perfect. Your books are both very different, so I'm going to give you each an opportunity to sort of introduce your concepts and then talk to you about what it is that you do in the world of food and writing. So, Kate, your new book is The Hip Girl's Guide to Homemaking. Your first book was The Hip Girl's Guide to Homemaking. Your second book is The Hip Girl's Guide to the Kitchen. Tell us what The Hip Girl's Guide to the Kitchen is.
The Hip Girl's Guide to the Kitchen is kind of a at-your-own-pace guide to kicking butt in the kitchen. So it's from stocking up to cooking those three meals a day from home, you know, trying to eat less out in the world due to budget or, you know, other types of concerns. And then other types of projects that you might expand into as your kitchen kick-ass gets geared up, and like preserving or throwing dinner parties and having people over and sharing food with friends. So it's really about being practical, but also having some fun.
As I was getting ready for the show, an email popped into my inbox from my alma mater, which is the Institute of Culinary Education on 23rd Street in Manhattan, and it said, how to do a Pinterest-worthy picnic. And I thought, oh, how perfect, because you mentioned Pinterest in the intro to your book.
Yeah, I mean, I think there's so much visually out there. Everyone feels possibly pressured to, like, have these perfect, everything, you know, Pinterest worthy, whatever, you know, and just, you know, I think that also inhibits people from actually getting to know the kitchen better, because they think, oh, I can never measure up, or, you know, like, oh, these people are doing it so much better, I could never do that. So I feel like I really want to get people just going, get started, feel empowered to maybe try something new in the kitchen, whether it's cooking dinner or whether it's making like an herb salt or herb butter or, you know, something that you can do with leftover whatever you have from the market or whatever you grew on your fire escape, you know?
Right, and I like the format of your book a lot, because there are lots of recipes in it, but it's sort of written like a teacher talks, like, okay, let's talk about vinegar. Here's how you buy it, here's how you store it, and here's what you use it for. And it's very readable, like where you can sit down and read it in chunks, unlike a cookbook where you sort of, I find that I fall into the trap of just looking for a particular recipe and kind of skimming over things if I'm not being mindful that there are other recipes that may catch my eye if I'm just looking for, like, the chocolate. I actually have the perfect example.
Right.
I have the 700-page Gourmet Today cookbook that was given to me as a gift. The only thing that I have cooked out of it is the brownie recipe, because I flip right to the brownies, I cook it, and then I put it back on the shelf, which is so bad. So I like yours because it's readable as something to learn from, not just something to cook from.
that's really was my goal. I really wanted to just be more of like a kitchen friend, you know, someone that you pull off the shelf and chat with or listen to as you're, you know, possibly either having a crisis in the kitchen or you're just trying to figure out, well, what's my next move in here? What, you know, I've mastered this. Now I'm going to move on to this.
Right.
So just helping people get into the swing of things with methods and to help people understand recipes, you know, because that's another big thing, depending on how they're written, who, you know, what type of food needs you are, allergies or whatnot. You know, I feel like recipes are a dime a dozen and you can find great ones, but people, it's just so personal. So get people just to understand the methods they're going to be using and then let them find their recipe that works for them.
And you really become a better cook that way. So from the very practical in-the-kitchen friend with you to the very whimsical Andre, we have Small-Time Cook's Culinary Coloring and Activity Book. Allison, our executive director at the radio station, is going to tweet out a picture. She took, I think she took a picture of the activity where you match the name of the cheese with the appropriate animal that the milks came from.
Yeah, I like that one. That was one of the, that was a great one to put together and work on.
So you are a sommelier by trade, but you went to school for finance.
Correct.
And now you are behind this cookbook. Can you give me sort of what's the arc of your life? How did you end up where you are?
Well, I went to college. I didn't know what I wanted to do or whatever. So like most people, I decided I would get in finance. So I got into finance. And then after gaining 40 pounds and not really doing anything, you know, I decided that I wanted to go back to school. But all throughout college, you know, I had waited tables. And that was something that came easy to me and natural and, you know, no day was the same and that kind of thing. And decided that I wanted to get back into restaurants. So I got back into restaurants and then I fell in love with wine. And that took me to this great place and to great heights. And it was really fun. I met a lot of people. And then with wine, you know, I kind of wanted to continue my education about wine. I had worked in these really great restaurants, but wanted to learn more about wine and just wine in general, not necessarily more of the food kind of thing, right?
Mm-hmm.
And then I hopped on the production side. And that, you know, that did a lot of things for me in the sense of, like, wanting to be creative, right? So, you know, I couldn't afford a designer, so I designed my own labels. And I wanted to be an entrepreneur, right? And it kind of, I could do all those things if I hopped on the production. And so that's kind of what I did. And then, you know, I miss restaurants. I love restaurants. I grew up in them. And I still get to go into my fair share of restaurants, actually probably quite a bit. But, you know, for me, this book was more about a love letter in a way, you know, a celebration of the restaurant industry and the chefs that work into it. You know, a lot of the proceeds, part of the proceeds are actually given to the Charlie Jollers Culinary Foundation, which I had the great pleasure of spending some time and working in the restaurant with the chef and, you know, with the staff. And it was really amazing, the thought and everything, the process and of food in general, but how he gave back to the community. And with his most recent passing, I felt like what better way to be able to celebrate him and everybody in it and what he meant to them through a coloring book. Like, nothing says celebration like coloring.
I have to say, I got this in the mail to look through before you were coming on the show. Kate, I got yours also. I kind of wanted to color in both of them. I mean, they're both so fun and interesting and well-designed in their own very particular ways. Kate, what's the story of your life? Like, how did you started the blog first, right? And then the books came out of your blog?
I did. I started the blog upon moving to Brooklyn and starting my freelance career, very slow start to my freelance career.
And freelance as a writer?
Yeah, writing, doing grant writing and other types of writing. So I moved there and realized, hey, I still need to, you know, keep house. I still need to, like, have a place where I enjoy being. And then I'm also gluten-free. I've been gluten-free for 8 years. And at the time, this, you know, moving to New York was kind of a jump start because the terrible bread that I had been buying was now like $3 more expensive per loaf.
Yeah.
And I'm like, okay, so maybe I'll try making this. You know, how hard can this be? You know, and it turns out I really enjoyed baking. That's kind of my thing. And it was cool to discover that here or in Brooklyn and then move on from there. So that was like my entrance to the kitchen. And and home in general, you know. And I started the blog more as of a sounding board, just to see, is this okay for a modern empowered woman to like baking bread, to enjoy making a nice place for herself and others to come, you know, to. So, and it turned out to be something people wanted to read about. And then I wrote The Hip Girl's Guide to Homemaking. It came out in 2011. And then have worked on The Hip Girl's Guide to the Kitchen since then.
I wrote a sort of memoir-esque essay about one day when I was I put on an apron and I was making strawberry jam, and I felt like a 1950s housewife. And I had this like realization in my kitchen, like, my mother raised me to not do that. Like, she wanted me to be an attorney or like a stockbroker. And here I was like wearing my pretty frilly pink apron. And I, you know, I have an education and I could do anything. I happened to be unemployed at the time, or sort of, you know, loosely freelance figuring out what I was going to do. This is before I went to culinary school. And I found that writing really helped me sort of compartmentalize, like, yes, it is okay to enjoy wearing an apron and making strawberry jam. Like, it doesn't make me less of an empowered person. And the reality is, and Andre, I think you can also speak to this, like, I'm doing it my way. Like,
right.
I'm saying, you know, there isn't somebody else out there who tells me, no, it's wrong to wear an apron. It's me saying, no, I'm going to do it, and I'm going to kick ass doing it. And that's sort of the tone that the Hip Girl's Guide takes.
Yeah, my very first blog post actually was entitled Keep the Apron, Pitch the Bra. Something like, just, you know, make it your own. Like, do you know, yes, there's a lot of baggage with all this stuff, but really, like, keep your mind focused on what makes you feel better and what empowers you, and then go from there.
And so, Andre, in terms of doing it yourself, this book that you've made is self-published. So how
Correct.
was that liberating to you, or was that terrifying, or both?
No, I guess I wouldn't necessarily be liberating to me. I just did it, right? So it was, there was no, from start to finish, there was no one to kind of interfere with the creative process or anything like that. So I just sat right down and got to it. There wasn't anybody nitpicking, saying you can do this or you can't do that. And I think that, you know, it's a really great feeling. A lot of people don't have a chance to do that. But I don't really know the other side of publishing either, right? So, you know, with volume two, I probably will. And I'm pretty sure that I could have sold the concept to a publisher. But I really wanted to do it all on my own first, right? And just to kind of experience all of that and what that means and how that feels. And then, you know, if I go to a publishing house for the second round, somehow, to embrace that experience as well.
And we have Kate. I mean, Kate, you can tell us, like, was having the structure of having a publisher, so now, you know, you've gone from your blog, which is 100% you and creative, to having a publisher. Did you enjoy the structure, or did you find, or, you know, how did you find that experience?
I've enjoyed it. I've worked with HarperCollins on both books. And I have a great editor. She just left the publisher, actually. So I've really appreciated the support that she's provided. And I just, you know, editors make things a million times better, in my opinion. You know, like, I feel like I just couldn't have done some things without her. And I realized she massaged stuff into helping fulfill my vision that maybe I didn't even know I had.
Cool.
It was great. And I really enjoyed, I've enjoyed the support stuff that they've offered up. You know, each publisher is totally different, of course, but I really enjoyed the support. You know, I have a publicist and a marketing person surrounding my book launches, and they, you know, they pay for stuff, and which is kind of olden days publisher stuff lingering.
Anyone still did that. Yeah.
Yeah. So pretty amazing. How I've worked with them. So I really appreciated that.
We need to take a quick break. Will you both be able to stay? Kate, can you stay on the line for a few more minutes?
Sure thing.
Okay, cool. We'll be back right after the break.
Oh, baby, can't you hear me crying? Oh, can you hear me now?
You are listening to Help Me Now by the California Honey Drops here on the heritageradionetwork.org. Stay tuned for more from Sharp and Hot.
Oh, can you hear me now? Oh, baby, please. Help me now. Oh, baby. Oh, baby, try me one more time.
fellow do-it-yourselfer, ever thought about gardening? If you can build that window box, you can build a raised bed in your backyard. Bonnie veggie and herb plants in raised beds make a fast weekend project with a big payback. Fresh, grow-em-yourself tomatoes and peppers, kale, basil and thyme, and so much more. Bonnie plants are healthy and strong and help jumpstart your garden. So get growing. Plans and how-tos at bonnieplants.com.
Welcome back to Sharp and Hot. I am Emily Peterson, your host, joining you on Heritage Radio Network, broadcasting live from Roberta's Pizza in Bushwick, Brooklyn. Joining me in the studio is Andre Mack, who is a winemaker, sommelier, author, graphic designer, and all-around cool guy. And on the phone is Kate Payne, author of her new book, The Hip Girl's Guide to Homemaking. I wanted to ask you guys some questions for listeners who are, let's say, first and foremost, it is suddenly very hot in Brooklyn. And so I have already made one steak salad for dinner because I've realized I live in New Jersey, but my little house gets very hot very quickly. So I'm wondering, Andre, can you give us some hot weather wine tips? What would you recommend for like a steak salad or something?
Steak salad? Rosé. And I think rosés are great in the sense that they're cool, so they can quench your thirst. A lot of people, I think more people tend to drink more red wine than white wine. So it still has those red fruit flavors, right? And so it's very refreshing, quench your thirst. And so rosé is the way to go.
How do you tell people if you're going to a store without the help of anyone who knows what they're talking about? Out by me, because liquor licenses are so expensive in New Jersey, the stores tend to be of the big box warehouse variety.
Got it.
And there are people who will offer their help, but they will not necessarily understand what you're asking for when you give them some "this is what I want" type thing. So if unescorted, how do you pick a rosé? Because rosé comes in all the whole spectrum of sweet to dry.
And correct.
So how do you give people some pointers if you want something specific?
Well, I mean, the thing is, I think you're an expert in your own taste. I would say, you know, take photographs of the labels of wines that you enjoyed, and try to look for them, or do a little bit more research online so you can find out what they are. If you like rosés from Provence, or do you like them from Burgundy, or other different parts of the world? It's really hard to kind of go into a shop unattended, right? Right. If there's no one there, you know, it's best to try to interact with someone, right? You know, the best wine shops are the ones that they have people there that can show you around. Other than that, I would say you'd really have to, and you know, but explore, right? You have to take chances, right? Too. That's the other part about wine is exploration, right? And being able to discover those things. And sometimes you can go into a big box store, not really know, and pick something.
Right. I like to tell people to buy two or three bottles of different wines. So if you want rosé, buy two or three, and then you'll know immediately which one you like either better or for different purposes.
Yeah, and I think you should try them all side by side. You should open them all up at once. And
most people think you're
crazy, right?
People hear you say that, and they're like, wait, you want me to open three bottles at once? And
they're like, we haven't finished drinking all of the rest of them, the first one, right? So the thing is, but that's also, too, I think a lot of people don't have a chance to actually taste wine side by side, because that's when you can really change, you know, notices the nuances in all three of those wines. If you drink one, you know, back to back to back, by the time you got to the second one, you may not even remember what the first one tastes like, right? So it's always interesting to be able to taste wine side by side. You know, that was the aha moment for me is when I worked in a restaurant and we got a chance to taste wine all side by side. So six different varietals. You know, that kind of thing really makes a difference.
You pour someone like six glasses of Riesling and they're like, oh, I had no idea.
Yeah, right. The first inclination is that they're all sweet. And so you work your way from sweet back to dry. And it's really interesting, you know, and just the different types of soil types and all that kind of stuff. So,
Kate, are you a wine drinker?
I am. And this is a great educational experience over here.
Is there anything that you want to know about wine? Maybe we can help answer some of your specific questions. And then you can explain to us how to choose something to cook on a hot night.
Well, I was just thinking when you were talking, it's not necessarily a question, but when you're talking about getting a few bottles of wine and opening them all up at the same time, it's a perfect opportunity to have people over because, you know, like all of you can imbibe together, you know,
and talk about it, it's such a social thing to do. Yeah.
Yeah.
The more the merrier. Yeah.
You know, like $60 worth of wine, you know, I mean, or depending on your price points. But yeah, so you can... you know, really explore flavors together and make it like an exciting event.
Yeah, and have people bring bottles, right? So that's really cool, right? Because then it's only $20 and you get to share in their experience.
Totally.
Right, and that's, you know, yeah, that's the best way to do it.
If you have a group of friends that you really like, too, you could say, okay, we're going to do Spanish whites. Everybody bring a Spanish white, and then that way it's not all over the place, but everybody's brought something kind of in the same area of the spectrum to talk about. Oh, and then
right,
you could do
and
like some manchego.
You can have some, yeah. Yeah, I was going to say, have some cheese on hand, have some things that like go well with those. That sounds delicious.
And I think, Kate, you brought up price point. I think one of the biggest takeaways, both in wine and cooking and entertaining, is like, it's not about how much money you spend. Like, it's easy to find a really, really good $100 bottle of wine, right, or a really good, you know, expensive cut of meat, or a really good expensive restaurant. Like, that's not really a challenge. For me, the fun is in finding, it's almost like being a mystery solver. Like, how can I spend the least amount of money? And also because I'm, you know, who I am, a little bit cheap and also a little bit broke. How can I make this look like $1 million, but really not break the bank? And that's more, even more fun. Like, we smoked a pig head for my husband's birthday party last year.
Awesome.
And the pig head fed probably 25 people, and the whole thing cost like maybe $10 for the head and a couple of bucks for the charcoal.
Correct.
And it was impressive. And we were like, but what no one knows is you just have to know where to find a pig head. Like, the hardest part was getting it back to our house.
Yeah, right. But yeah, that's the beauty of food and entertaining, right? It's not about how much money you spend. You know, if a bottle of wine costs $100 or more, it better taste good.
Right, exactly.
Right? It's the reason why I get up every day was to find those bottles that drank better than the price point.
I'm really excited to try your wines, too.
That's right. Yeah,
tell us about your label. I have not had any yet.
I started a company called Mouton Noir Wines, translation Black Sheep.
It took me like 4 readings of that to get. I was like, oh, Black Sheep.
Yeah, yeah, right. There wasn't a lot of people that looked like me that did what I did. So I got the nickname Mouton Noir when I came to New York. And so, I wanted to make food-friendly style wines, wines that were transparent, honest, and spoke of a place for Morgan, right? And we make Love Drunk Rosé, which is an ode to my restaurant career, which was full of infatuation and intoxication, right? We have Knock on Wood, which is our stainless steel Chardonnay, all fruit from the Dundee Hills in Oregon. We also have OPP. You might have seen that around here. It's called Other People's Pinot. So that's our everyday drinking Willamette Valley Pinot Noir. And then we have a wine called Horseshoes and Hand Grenades, which is our red wine blend. So you can sample those all across the country. We're in about 47 states.
That is amazing.
Yeah.
So, Kate, leave us with a takeaway tip for cooking in the super hot weather.
Well, possibly do it in your toaster oven, which you got because you ditched your microwave. Super cool. You know,
you're getting a big thumbs up cheer from Andre over here in the studio.
Yeah, no microwave here.
But another thing is, like, just do stuff, like, there's all sorts of great things you can, like, you can ferment your own vinegars in hot weather. Like, whatever.
What? How do you ferment your own vinegar?
Add sugar and water. The recipe's in the book, or the methodology, it's not even a recipe. But you pour sugar water solution over fruit that's either seen better days, not like moldy gross fruit, but, you know, stuff that's just kind of mushy or just... even, you know, prime in its prime. So you just pour this sugar water solution over it and let it turn into fruit booze for a week, and then strain out the fruit and let it get exposed, or just like you would with wine, which that you've forgotten about, or wine that has seen better days, you can expose it to oxygen,
right,
and it'll turn into vinegar.
And you cover it with like a cheesecloth?
Yeah, cheesecloth or a thin towel, like kitchen towel, flour sack or something, with a rubber band, and kind of a wide, give it some surface area. So if you can put it in a bowl, that's great. You can make the booze part, step one, in like a mason jar with a lid. But then when you're exposing it to oxygen, just kind of a wide, flat bowl.
And then how long do you let it sit out for?
Well, vinegar, Acetobacter bacteria, works well in 80 to 100 degree temperatures, and my Brooklyn kitchen was like 95 at least, so perfect.
I was in a top floor walk-up once without air conditioning. I know that kitchen.
Wow.
Oh, boy. Yes, that was it. but, yeah, so it takes probably about 2 weeks to effectively turn into vinegar. You know, just give it a whisk, give it a taste. And then you have a live cultured vinegar with a mother. On my blog, hipgirlshome.com, there's a whole bunch of posts that have actual pictures of, like, the mother forming, and it's really cool. You make this science project that's actually really good for you.
I'm really falling in love with all things fermented, and I was being a little bit facetious when I say, what? How do you make your own vinegar? I made sour pickles, though, a couple of summers ago, and they got so gnarly, I was actually scared to eat them. They ended up going to the chickens because the top level layer of mold was, like, as thick as, like, a paperback book. Like, I could peel it open and close. And I got scared of it. But I have to, like, overcome this. Like, I have this sort of puritanical fear of fermenting things on my counter, but I encourage other people to do it. I just am scared to do it. I'm going to try it, though, on your recommendation. I have some blueberries, as we speak, in the refrigerator that got stuck behind something big, and I forgot about them, and I think they're right about perfect.
Yay, blueberry vinegar.
So here's the thing that I want to thank both of you for in your contribution to the world of food publishing and food literacy. I recently had a cookbook die, a project die, and it was heartbreaking, and it's over, and it was kind of a relief that it was done. But in the next step process, it's like, okay, what is the cookbook that I want to write? And it's like, I feel like Winnie the Pooh sitting on a log being like, think of something. And what you both have managed to do with these books, and why I'm really glad to have brought you both together here, is that you've contributed not to the background noise of, like, food porn photography and 50 ways to go to the farmer's market and make fruit desserts. Like, I really, really appreciate your unique, and your unique to each yourselves, approaches to getting the book out there, making it happen, but in a way that's not just sort of glossy cover for the first thing that people see when they walk into a large book retailer. And I really appreciate that, and thank you for it.
Thank you. Thank you. It was my pleasure.
I'm going to put the links to both of you up on Sharp and Hot. Usually, I bought myself a laptop a few months ago, and it's really helped me, like, get things done in a way that I can, like, sit in my car with my toddlers at the babysitter, like, bang things out. The website is not up if you are listening live. Give me 20 minutes, and I'm going to run out to my car and put the links up to the Hip Girl's Guide to Homemaking and the Hip Girl's Guide to the Kitchen, and also to Andre Mack's Small Time Cooks Culinary Coloring and Activity Book. On next week's show, I'm very excited to be hosting my friend Pete Shukoff, who is the mastermind behind Nice Peter and Epic Rap Battles of History. You may have heard of him. Additionally, we are coming into our fundraising season, and it will be brief and painless. And I encourage all of you who love Heritage Radio Network and everything we do to become members by going to heritageradionetwork.org and clicking the donate button. You can get a tote bag and be our friend and have our gratitude forever and ever, because the reality is that the people who listen are the people who make this show possible. And I know you have a lot of options out there to entertain yourselves on Tuesdays between 2 and 2:30. In the New York market, it's just me and Terry Gross. So go ahead, go to the website, click donate, and become a member. And you know you will have our undying appreciation and gratitude. Until next week, thank you to my guests, Andre and Kate. Thank you for coming. I am Chef Emily Peterson. You can find me on Twitter and Instagram at Chef Emily P. Until next week, keep playing with fire and knives.
Thanks for listening to this program on heritageradionetwork.org. You can find all of our archived programs on our website or as podcasts in the iTunes Store by searching Heritage Radio Network. You can like us on Facebook and follow us on Twitter at @heritage_radio. You can email us questions at any time at info@heritageradionetwork.org. Heritage Radio Network is a nonprofit organization. To donate and become a member, visit our website today. Thanks for listening.